Welcome to What's My Thesis. I'm Javier Proenza, and today my guest is Jacqueline Cedar in New York, right? Is that where you are right now? I know you moved, you've done stuff in Chicago recently.
I'm in Brooklyn.
You're in Brooklyn? Okay. Well, I have questions about the Brooklyn art scene as a complete, like, it's a huge gap in my knowledge base. But I want to get a little bit background on you first. So, we met at Last Projects. Were you in the show or were you doing, did you curate the show? I think it was someone else, right, that curated that show at Last.
Yeah. Yola curated, at Alona Space, but I work with an artist who I represent, Becky Brown, who's going to be showing with us in New York next month, and she was in the show, so I came to support.
Oh, cool. And then you did something in Chicago and you did something out here, so I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about those. What was the other show? It was at Hyperion something?
I did two shows in LA. One was at 2413 Hyperion. It was The Hunger Artist, so a painting show with four artists and a performance with my dad, who's an actor, doing Kafka's The Hunger Artist and an adapted version. And then we did a collaboration with Rhett Baruch Gallery, a design gallery on Melrose in West Hollywood.
Oh, cool. So you had a pretty packed, and then you were at like somewhere, I just want to give people an idea of how active you are, you know, so you were in Chicago, you did a show there too after the LA stuff. Where else, did you hit any of those other spots?
No, I was in LA for about 3 months. I came back to New York for like a week just to reset. And then I went to Chicago for a week for a miniature fair called Barely Fair. And I just got back to New York. So now I'm getting ready for Future Fair in New York.
Okay. And then, so you run Good Naked, which is, you're the founder, right? And you were telling me at Last Projects that you do it out of your, or you started it out of your apartment.
Yeah.
So that leads me, tell us a little bit about Good Naked, but I am also very curious about artist run scene, because to me it just seems financially unmanageable. And you can maybe add that into your, because the rents are so crazy, you know, but please tell us about Good Naked. You said it's a reference. Is it a reference to the episode of Seinfeld where he's living with the woman that's always naked?
Exactly.
Is it? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, I've got like a mini photo of Seinfeld and all the logos for our programs.
Okay. So then, cool. Tell us a little bit about Good Naked.
So, excuse me. It's like you said, I started out of my apartment October 2019, and I had a second bedroom. I had a roommate at the time that left, and didn't really want another roommate. I felt like I'd aged out of that. And I also had a lot of curatorial ideas I'd been wanting to explore, but didn't have a space for. So I started planning maybe like for a couple months worth of shows and realized I had like 6 months of ideas I wanted to iterate. Mm-hmm. And anyways, ended up kind of doing 6 months worth of shows out of my apartment. And
when you say 6 months, is that six shows?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Like, pretty full program, like really quick turnover, like maybe a few days between each show, just because basically I was using the hallway and foyer for murals. So I invited two artists each show to paint murals in my hallway and foyer. And then I had the second bedroom that I used for like a more curated exhibition and a mini white space.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. And then the pandemic hit March 2020. That was when the next show was set to open, March 13th, 2020. And so we couldn't have the opening. And then I just spent like the next few months trying to figure out how to keep the project going in different ways. So it like kind of turned into these virtual exhibitions, like designed in a video game space and rendered in CAD by an architect friend who modeled my apartment. And then we had Zoom openings. My computer got funky. I don't know if you can still hear me.
You're frozen, but I can hear you. There you go. We're back to normal.
Okay, good. And then like eventually transitioned to outdoor shows. And now the model has become this sort of like roving project that involves a lot of collaborations with other more permanent brick and mortar spaces.
Cool. And you said you represent artists like Becky Brown. Are you doing, is this a commercial venture as well?
Yeah, so like pretty early on, I realized that I needed to sell work to keep it going because I was really ambitious about the project and it was expensive even out of my apartment. I was like paying the extra rent and like having photographers and art handlers come through and, you know, just hiring people for various things. So I got really curious as an artist about how to sell art and just felt really opaque having not worked at a gallery before. So I was just like thinking a lot about how to make art accessible to other artists who wanted to buy art, but also, you know, figure out how to sell to collectors who were excited about the programming and I knew were kind of buying at bigger spaces and so just trying to enter that world.
That's very cool. And then, so wait, how many artists are you representing?
So it's a lot, it's 20. But you know, it's kind of fluctuated over the years. I kind of do short contracts so I can kind of work with people and see if it's a good fit. And then, you know, the goal is for them to grow out of my space into bigger spaces. So there's a lot of movement over, you know, it's only been just under 5 years. So
that's very cool. Around. So then That's very different than what my experience with Artist Run Spaces out here is. I mean, I know that, you know, we mentioned Last and they're definitely an Artist Run Space and they do have a selling model, right? Which is interesting. But can you tell me a little bit about what Artist Run New York is like? I mean, I'm sure there's a scene. I just don't. Do people rent stuff? Like how it just seems so small and expensive. Does that make sense? But I want to be proven wrong. I'm completely ignorant to what happens in New York at that level.
No, I mean, I think that like I'm certainly not an expert and there's a wide range. I think actually this woman from Hyperallergic came to interview me not so long ago and she was doing like kind of a rundown on all of the like home galleries that she had heard about in New York. So maybe that'll come out soon. There'll be like more of a, I don't know, like a list that is comprehensive in some way. But, you know, I think they change a lot over time. I had been really inspired by, I had a couple artist friends who were doing small projects out of their apartments. In other cities like Columbus, Ohio was one of the first ones I got to know. It was in a commercial space near other studios, but it was artist run and really ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I got excited about that program. And then my friend Josh Abla was running Freddy out of Baltimore. And then eventually, you know, in this sort of like converted church space, there's this guy, Austin Eddy, who was doing things out of his closet. So there were like all of these models that I'd kind of been peripherally connected to or interested in. And then when I started MySpace, I started doing a deeper dive and just, I mean, it's kind of infinite. There's so many spaces. But I think like you're saying, like they function in different ways because the real estate is so expensive. So sometimes they're like maybe smaller corners of the apartment. And then some people just really throw down and do like fancier things in an apartment and it's cool to see things in that kind of space. So.
Well, I think you answered my question in a way that I didn't anticipate because you're referencing all these apartment-based spaces. Yeah. Are there any collectives that like rent out massive spaces? Because that happens out here. Okay.
So I kind of like started there. So like OYG is a big one that I had been following. It's like a collective of artists. There's Sunny started a while ago. It was three artist friends who were, you know, kind of getting going in that way. So there are artist run commercial spaces. I'm thinking about, I mean, again, like I'm certainly not an expert, but there, you know, there are quite a few models that I've kind of been following. I mean, two, you know, collectives that I follow closely are Underdonk and TV Projects, which are both based out of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. Yeah. There are a lot of ambitious models that I could kind of use as a starting point for thinking about how to operate. And a lot of the artists who ran those spaces at some point or another did contribute to programs that I was working on. So there's a lot of, I think, crossover and support too.
Do you have, you mentioned you're an artist as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Can we get your origin story on that? Like, when did you start realizing you're an artist? And then how did you transition into the artist you are today? Like, you know, like, for example, what were you into in high school? Did you draw at all in high school, middle school, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got into it. I think I like realized in middle school I was really into it because I like wanted some drawing elective that I didn't get. And I'm pretty sure I cried about it. And my mom was like, oh, I didn't know about this. But my dad's an actor. And so I was like, always engaged in the arts and like seeing theater and music and dance. And that was very supported in my family. So I had that kind of baked in. And my sister is like also in theater and TV and film. And my mom's just like kind of creative in all lines of craft and making. So it was very supported. And then, you know, kind of did like figure drawing with animators at like Disney Studios on the weekends. And I went to like art camp in high school, you know, like at CalArts and Otis. And
wait, did you grow up out here?
Yeah, I grew up in LA. Oh,
okay. How long were you?
I grew up in the Valley. I ended up going to UCLA for as an art major in college. And so like a lot of my, you know, faculty were LA based, kind of like heavy hitter artists. I studied mostly painting and photography. So I was with like Larry Pittman and Kathy Opie and Jim Welling and, a million other great people who I can't believe spent so much time with 18-year-olds, you know, it's like kind of awesome. And then, I like when I got toward the end of UCLA, I just felt like I didn't want to stop making work. I wasn't sure if I wanted to like do it professionally, but I figured I probably wanted to teach. Like I'd been working at the Hammer Museum, giving tours, as like, you know, a student job. And I really liked that. And, so I applied to grad schools and then I like got into all these great ones and I was like, oh, I guess this is happening. So I went to Columbia. I was 21 when I started. Which is like, I didn't realize at the time was like, I was like the only one that age, like everyone else was about 10 years my elder. And then, I feel like New York is such a challenging place to integrate into professionally and just like financially. And so by the time I finished school, I was like, well, I've made all these connections and it feels like giving up to leave. Like I always thought I'd go back to LA, but I just really wanted to like try New York out for longer. And every year I just like made the tiniest bit more headway and was like, well, now I have to stay longer because like that much closer and that much further, you know, I think LA and New York are similar that way where you like, you feel so close to this like very high level, but you're also, you know, it creates this illusion that keeps you fighting, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, there's definitely a sunken cost fallacy that ends up happening, you know?
Yeah, that's all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm deeper and deeper and I just keep going. I think a lot of artists are this way where you just like, you can't stop. That's like what keeps you. Yeah. So you just do it and it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it feels good somehow.
Well, but I mean, it does seem like you have a pretty solid business plan, right? Like I know a lot of spaces run at a deficit, right? Just because they do it for the love, which is great. Right. But no, it's great, but the caveat to that is that it's not necessarily sustainable, you know, so
right.
I find myself in a similar boat as you where I'm like, okay, let's figure out how to make some money out of this effort.
It's a lot of energy. Yeah. Yeah. And it's your time. If you're an artist, you really value time because like you could be in the studio any hour you're not in the studio is like, okay, so how is this serving me? That's how I think about things. So I'm like, I really try to be efficient. You said something just now I wanted to respond to and I've forgotten, but anyways.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In the beginning, I really felt like, oh, as long as I break even, that's enough. And then, you know, the further and further in I got it, I just felt like this is a business that has to like, it, you know, it has to be kind of generative. Otherwise, it's just too much time and energy. Yeah.
Yeah. You're working against the labor that you do to get paid, you know?
Right. Yeah. A lot of artists end up doing free labor for one reason or another. And sometimes it's like, you have to do those kinds of things because it's meaningful and like it kind of generates the next thing and it builds your audience and, you know, respect and community and all those things that are really important, but it's like that balance, you know?
Well, I want to ask you both about your work and then also the programming at the space. Let's start with your work. And then I just threw them both out so that you remember later if I forget.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So tell us a little bit about your work.
Okay. Yeah. So my paintings, they've like always been figurative. Throughout my making time have been interested in drawing people and their connections and thinking about like psychology in relation to like physical relationships between people and spaces. So that's kind of stayed consistent from like college through grad school and a little bit after. I was making very large scale work because I felt like it was important for the figures to be close to life size so people could maybe imagine entering the space. And it's like maybe in the past 3 or 4 years that I've started scaling down to this like much more intimate size. They're like 5 by 7 inches, and like, you know, 10 by 8 is general fare. Right now I'm making something 20 by 24, which feels big since, you know, in recent years. And they, you know, the images are kind of, they're a little bit cartoony. They come from like a mix of dream space and daily observations. They can kind of sometimes veer into surreal. And they're acrylic paintings. So they're a little bit graphic, but they have a sort of a velvety quality because I use an absorbent ground. So it changes, it makes it a little bit of a matte surface. Mm.
Very interesting. So then you've always been interested in figurative work?
Yeah, I think growing up watching theater and film and like reading fiction, I've just like, I like, that's kind of where my head is in terms of like watching people and the way they interact. Lately, I've been kind of moving more into observation of other things like spaces. I mean, especially in LA, I don't know if I told you this when we met, but I've been like obsessed with painting cars and traffic because it's just like whatever is in my visual periphery, like tends to take up space in my paintings. And I've spent so much time driving in LA that it just really kind of entered the work. And I'm actually going to be in a show in LA in July, and I'm going to have 4-car paintings. So you'll see them maybe if you're around.
Nice.
But they're like, I feel like the car is kind of surrogate for like bodies moving, like the traffic and the kind of flow of, movement on a street and lights and like that. They sort of become abstract in certain ways, but
they're like almost like exoskeletons, you know,
mm-hmm.
like,
yeah.
when you're moving around the space, which is, it's an interesting thing to, I'm also fascinated by LA traffic. And the way that it moves and I live close to like an overpass or a spot where you can walk over. I live close to LAST. So that's where that bridge is, the I-95. Yeah. So you can just stand there on that bridge and look at traffic and get that vertigo.
Speaking of Cathiopi, like those highway series where like everything empties out and it's just like visually really kind of feels, I don't know, like some sort of metropolis situation. Yeah.
Okay. And then can you talk a little bit about your programming? Are all artists, let's talk a little bit about what you're, or take it however you want. And then I'll ask you about the artists.
Okay. So the programming kind of started with this goal of showing artists who didn't, you know, already have a lot of attention, who didn't have maybe like an exhibition history, but I knew were really, you know, doing ambitious work, and I wanted to give a platform to share. And, you know, in the beginning, it started from people I knew, like my immediate art community in New York, and a lot of artists who were also teachers, because that's what I was doing primarily for income, and artists sometimes peripheral to my grad programming. And then it just sort of...
Did I ask you where you went to grad school?
Oh, I went to Columbia. That's how I ended up moving.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm not sure if you said which school, but that's how I ended up here. So yeah, it was like kind of started with people I knew and then grew to like friends of friends. And then during the pandemic, actually, I had all this time. So I started doing a lot of international studio visits on Zoom like this and having like just kind of broader conversations with artists from different cities because I didn't have to like ship physical work. So I could be like a little bit more, broad thinking in who I was connecting with. So it's a wide range. I would say like most of the artists I'm working with regularly are New York based. And then I have a few in LA and New Mexico and, a couple, you know, out of the country. And, I try to really, you know, just always be looking at new images and seeking out new voices. Cause I think it keeps the program fresh and interesting. And I like kind of spreading the opportunities around. I think it's just more fun than, you know, we all know like there are certain artists that we see all the time in every show, and that's great too, but and now that I'm representing people, I kind of have to be mindful of making sure that they have space, consistently, but it's always nice to find new work.
Let's go through the 6 months of programming that you did. Okay. Because that's like the first, at bat, right? I want to hear about the hecticness, what you learned and mm-hmm. things like that. Cause that just seems like it seems, you know, like most people, I don't know, I guess I'm not one to speak because I started a podcast and I haven't stopped, you know, but there's so much that you learn when there's the idea and then there's the pragmatic execution mm-hmm. of it. And I'm interested in like, because that sounds overwhelming. Also, I invite people to my house to for interviews, and that stresses me out. But you're having audiences come in, which is more than just one person a week, you know?
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, I did it by RSVP. So people had to kind of send a message saying they wanted to come, and then I'd send the address. So I tried to kind of keep it controlled to a certain degree because I live here by myself, and I just strangers roaming through, and I'm sure my apartment fellow dwellers would not appreciate that either. But in the beginning it just felt like a big house party, and it was really fun, and I honestly was surprised how many people came, because I live pretty far south in Brooklyn, and it's not an area that is highly trafficked by artists as far as I knew. And so I didn't know what the attendance would be. I kind of figured if I made a cool show and documented it well, then it would just travel digitally, and that would be the thing. So I was really excited when people came. I also I'm an artist who has a very solitary practice that is painting, but I'm a very social person. And so those things kind of conflict, and it was a really nice way to kind of bring the social into that space. I think, did I answer both of you? You had a couple other parts of that question, but yeah. So in the beginning, the social part of it was really exciting. I think people look at art in a home in a different way than they do in a gallery space. I think that people stay longer when they're making a destination journey versus hopping to five galleries in one evening. So all of those things I thought were really cool. The installation, the first show, I gave people the key to my apartment while I was out for the day and let them come paint in my house, those murals that were made. So it was a lot of kind of trust and camaraderie involved in being an artist that I've always found is kind of amazing. When I travel to other cities, I'll kind of cold write to artists to come to their studios. And it's just this awesome way that we are able to connect that is so different from most people in other industries.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. So I thought that was really, I just thought it was really amazing how people came together and were supportive of it. They're all the logistical things that just were basic, but I had to figure out because I never run a gallery, just making sure I knew, the proper way to pay people for photography and art handling and repainting the walls. I just didn't have the time and energy to do it all myself. So I ended up kind of having a few people supporting in that way. And then there was just the factor of being an artist and thinking oh, I'm an artist, I get other artists, and realizing that we all operate in very different ways,
I've also learned that.
Yeah, just navigating all of these things. I tend to be fairly type A as artists go, but there's just a wide range of us. So it was overall very positive. There were a couple complaints from neighbors, but considering how many events I was at, and I also had this component, I wanted to it to be sort of a salon. So I had play readings and some comedy shows and some video screenings. It was fun. It was really amazing. It was kind of special.
And then how do you feel? So you mentioned a little bit about the integration with the broader art market, the higher end, maybe David Zwirner's, but I'm guessing you're talking more mid tier galleries that you're butting up against and having relationships with, or are you, do you know David?
I did do Platform, which is baby version of working with David Zwirner. I don't know him.
What's Platform?
Platform is this online program that is associated with David Zwirner, where they kind of host digitally art sales by other, it used to be mostly smaller galleries, but now it's kind of turned into, a wide range of different tier spaces. I really like their team. I don't have any connection to David Zwirner other than being hosted by them to show some of my artist's work.
That's awesome, dude. I didn't even know that existed. You taught me something today.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. It's you never know what's interesting to folks, but that's something that we've participated in. And then, mostly in the beginning, it was collaborations with other like-minded, similarly oriented spaces like Artist Run. And, because I was doing things at the edge of pandemic, post-vaccination, I worked with this artist in New Mexico and I said, I'd really like to show your work. And he said, I know the space in Albuquerque. This guy runs a gallery out of his gazebo in the backyard. And I literally flew to Albuquerque. It was my first trip out post-pandemic, post-vaccine. And I showed up at this guy's house and he was like, yeah, like do whatever you want. He was so generous. Jonathan Hartshorn, he runs Calendar Gazebo, and Drew Miller, who's the artist that I show. He connected us, and it was just like this kind of generosity I was talking about amongst artists, where he was like total trust. Like, yeah, whatever you want to do, like the space is like my space is your space. And I got to host two artists in New Mexico and two from New York that I brought with me in my suitcase. And this is like a really fun collaboration. So
I love the visual of you having artists inside the actual artists, not the work.
I wish that it happened. I'm always trying to cram as much as I can into that carry on.
Yeah. So, well, you would have to definitely pay the extra fee for luggage weight.
I'm like worried about these artists in the suitcase. Anyways, so that was kind of the first of many. Yeah. And now I've gotten to the habit of like sort of generating these pitches, you know, to spaces that I think would be, you know, interesting, that, you know, we have like-minded taste in terms of styles of work that we show, or we just kind of have similar values in our programming. And, so that's kind of been the model of just, you know, talking to artists about what kind of spaces they want to see their work in and trying to manifest it, because I don't have like, yeah, the monthly regular spot. So I'm kind of like really,
you're not doing it out of your apartment anymore.
No, I use my apartment as a showroom. Like if collectors want to come by, I have like, you know, a group of works by artists that I work with more regularly that I can hang on the wall and display for those kinds of conversations. And, you know, if an artist or a writer wanted to come by or see something, it's available. But, I just felt at a certain point, like artists really wanted their work. Like a priority was for artists to have their work, you know, be seen more visibly, more accessibly. And I don't know, like, I mean, I think, again, there's something special about it being in a home, but it's not nearly as accessible as other spaces. So try to.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting. I don't mean this in a negative way, but yeah. It's interesting. Sort of the subtext of what you're saying is that to some degree, it's a home gallery is not as effective as what you're doing now. Am I completely being, you know, wrong here?
I don't know. I was like sort of thinking about it as I was saying it, because it's like sometimes like you'll be in the art fair with all the other big galleries and you've paid the booth fee and you know, you've shown up and you've put on this fancy display, and some collector, they missed the booth because there were like 30 other spaces and they like ran out of time or whatever. And so in some ways, like having a space where you make an appointment and it's a special thing and you really have to like make a concerted effort to get there can be better. You know, it just sort of depends on the situation. I think like what I started to see was that artists were more attracted to things that were more visible in like a commercial way. I kind of try to follow, you know, because I'm such a new space, I'm kind of constantly like talking with artists about like what's working for me, what's working for them, like how we match their goals, because everyone has different, you know, and somebody might say, like at some point, I really want to come paint the halls in your apartment. And I might say yes, you know, because it's like, that's an exciting thing to do. But I feel like I'm, you know, mostly kind of thinking about like, okay, what is going to benefit them in terms of growing their career and giving them more opportunities, that sort of thing. And then of course I do have to think about sales. So it's another
piece that makes sense. And it sounds like you're living the best of both, because you still have a location that collectors can come and you still have a showroom, which I think is awesome.
I think the strange thing is that like a lot of people will buy work without seeing it in person, which is so wild, but common, you know? So I think to me, like as an artist, I just want always for my work to be seen, you know, as an object in real life in relation to a human, because like there's just a difference, and you can't, you know, no matter how amazing your documentation is, it's just a different experience to have a physical relationship. So, yeah, I really like believe in that. But also, you know, you kind of just have all the different layers of access, because not all possible all the time.
Yeah. What are the things that you think are like the most important things? Because all right, so we've been having this conversation, and it's just actually really serendipitous that you're also interested in the commercial side of things, because I've been doing the show also for 5 years, and I've just kind of done it as a hobby for most of the time, you know. Now that I really am interested in it, I've realized that I've just documented a lot of the, let's call it the pro bono community art scene, you know, which is like, I'm not saying it's invalid, but it is a different, it has a different set of concerns, right? More idea based, whereas not that the market doesn't like ideas, but there's just a bit of a difference. You know, one is more community driven and one is more driven by money. So I've been actually sort of trying to get into more of this discussion. What are the things that you didn't know, like, about selling work that you've learned that I think that maybe would be a benefit to anyone listening that is, like, you know, a novice to all of this stuff? Because, like you said, you mentioned yourself, it's nebulous until you, right. You know, there's no textbook, right?
Right. Like, yeah, there really isn't. I mean, there's, like, kind of a lot you can learn by doing, and then every situation is different. Did you read the Rick Rubin book by any chance?
No, is that a strong recommend?
I don't know. I really thought it was cheesy when my friend recommended it to me, and I thought, like, no way I'm going to read that book. And then I just, like, totally drank the Kool-Aid. Like, I just, I think it's very validating as an artist to, like, he's kind of just saying all the things that we already know, but it kind of makes you feel like you're part of this larger, you know, ecosystem and, like, of, like, sort of maybe species of, like, animals that behave in a certain way, you know? And uh-huh. It's like, so the reason I brought it up is because he talks a lot about, like, relying on your work as, like, you know, a sustainable source of income versus, like, having a day job and, you know, just, like, not putting that pressure on your work. And it's, to me, like, such a luxury to not have to think about money, you know, like most people who, you know, do, like, pro bono work, they're have, like, their source of income is elsewhere or someone supporting them in some way, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's not working, but, like, you know, it's coming from somewhere, like, where we live in this, like, capitalist environment. Yeah. So, I mean, anyway, maybe somebody's figured out a smart way to evade that, but I haven't yet. But, I think, like, I was, like, I don't know. I was drawn in by that because I've made my income primarily as an educator. And so I don't rely primarily on the gallery or my art sales to survive, but it's, like, become a portion of the income, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I don't know, I guess, like, as an artist and as a dealer, the one thing that I realized is that, like, there's, like, things that are about the art and then there are, like, all of the other things. And in some ways that takes a lot of pressure off because you realize, like, okay, there's, like, good art and that's really important and that hopefully will filter to the top. But then there's just, like, all of these other layers of things that factor into whether or not something sells or gets shown and on and on. And yeah, that was kind of, like, a relief to discover. Cause I think a lot of times as an artist, when you're not showing or, like, making connections to galleries or even selling your work, if you are, you just start to feel like it's your work, you know? And, like, it might be, but it also, like, it could be, like, a whole long list of other things. And I think, I don't know, that sort of made me feel free in terms of, I kind of always ignored those things, but it, you know, it just gives some relief, I think, in the studio to feel like, okay, I can just make what I want to make and there's no way to really control how people will receive it. You try to, like, be professional and do your best work and just be making all the time. And then you hope that you find the right match for, you know, propping it to the next level or whatever.
That's really interesting. I definitely am going to check that out. I must confess my reaction is it's one of those things that he's like, really, I don't hate anything Rick Rubin does.
I had, like, no sense of it at all. And people kept quoting it. And, like, personally, not to cut you off, but, like if somebody tells me to read or watch anything about artists, I'm like, nah, like, that's my whole life. I need anything that's, like, outside of that. I want, like, anything that's in a different world, like nature or, like, some other art or, like, something just, like, completely dumb, like Food Network, like, whatever. Like, I just need to, like, step out of it. So the idea of reading a book about artists is, like, no. But I did find some really interesting moments in it. I felt it's like, he's kind of like your dad, you know, like, he's just like sort of a supportive dad.
Like, well, it's also funny because all of that stuff is
dad,
like,
and, like, meditation.
but it's like when I was a kid and people were really, like, into Clapton, you know, like, how relevant is he to Gen Z, you know? Yeah. So it's like, no, an, I mean, old,
like, I mean, I don't, I have no way to answer any of that, but as
no,
a
30- I love all, I love, look, I love his, I don't even like Aerosmith, and Walk This Way with Run DMC is one of the best things ever, you know? Like,
so I really was not even aware of his influence on, like, the music sphere.
Oh, yeah,
I just,
yeah.
Yeah, I kind of just like landed on it accidentally and then totally gave into it. So that's all. That's the rest that I'll say.
That's all you'll say about Rick Rubin. Yeah. No, but it is one of those things that is like, it's funny. It's, you know, like as you get older, you start seeing yourself, your age group having the same. What's that? What'd you say?
I said you get softer and over sincere.
I think, you know, and then you have your heroes that just become irrelevant to most of the community, you know, because I doubt Gen Z's listening to, you know, Run DMC at the same rate that we were.
There's a lot of throwbacks happening, so you never
really
know.
Okay. I do make a lot of assumptions.
I'm not in touch, but I do teach high school every once in a while, so it's always interesting.
Can I ask you what year you went to Columbia? What year that was
oh,
recently?
Yeah. 2007, 2009. So unfortunately, no longer recently.
Oh, okay. Like yeah.
Every time you say that, yeah.
All right, yeah. 2007, and you were 21. Wow. So yeah. you went there young.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, go ahead.
No. You cut me off. Every time you are more than welcome to cut me off. No one cares what I have to say. I do this every week. You make the best guests, people like you. That's why when we were talking, I was like, oh, okay. We got a lot to talk about when we were talking about at last project. I was like, guest.
I liked it. There's great faculty. There were a lot of amazing visitors. There were good, you know, full-time faculty, but a lot of really amazing visiting critics like Charlene Van Heil and Stephen Westfall were kind of in my studio a couple times. Yuta Kotur, Greg Aminoff was running the program at the time. Kara Walker was kind of awesome. And anyway, so I had a really like nice full range of people. Like I feel like I make kind of traditional paintings, but I really like love talking to people who are in a totally different sphere because it's like more interesting to hear, you know, someone else's take on things. And
when you say traditional, you mean more like...
They're
chiaroscuro?
No, I guess I just mean like they're illustrative. Like they have a figure, you know, like they have kind of like rendering, you know, like I'm just into sort of the technical aspect of things.
Is there narrative? Are they narrative or are they more poetic?
I think of them as little visual poems. I'm sure people could read narrative into them. I always feel sort of self-conscious about directing that. But I think, yeah, there's definitely like imagery that lends toward interpretation in that way. Anyways, I felt like New York was really the education. Like grad school was amazing. And I had a lot of really incredible conversations in the studio. But just like having all the museums, you know, like running around to all the galleries, that was sort of a huge part of it. So it's like, yeah, it was good. I mean, it was like sort of, it was really intimidating. But also great. Yeah. I was really focused on the studio. I just wanted to paint all the time.
Yeah.
So what probably wasn't as social as I could have been, but it was good.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you're the second person I've had on. I had Tita Whitney Leck who said that she like went to New York and that's where her career, she's doing pretty well right now. She's just about to show at Night Gallery this weekend.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
And it's like, it's really, it's crazy how that city can snap people's brains into, and you, also you're she's from Long Beach or maybe a little farther south, but you're also from LA. So it's interesting the change in pace of lifestyle.
Right. It's a really also different set of artists that get worshipped. Like there's kind of like an LA, you know, like the CalArt scene was sort of like the people that everybody looked up to when I was in LA. And then I got to New York and everybody was talking about like all the sort of like ABEX history, you know, so it's like different kind of conversations around sets of artists and communities of artists. And then I always felt in LA like I was a little bit like faster paced than people were comfortable with. And in New York, everyone thought I was very chill, you know, so it's like this kind of relative. But I felt like New York really suited me. So, yeah, for the most part.
Well, you left it a long time ago. So I guess the scene has changed so much. It's not fair to ask you to compare them. But I'm just fascinated. I'm just fascinated by your outlook because it does sound like the prevalence or prevalence, or there's a lot of apartment galleries, which out here you have them, but it sounds like there's a lot of people that do the DIY thing like that, you know, like through, you said, like closets and stuff like that. Whereas over here, I feel like spaces, it's not that space is cheap, but per square foot by comparison, it seems like it's just, it's ridiculous.
I think LA has gotten much more expensive recently, but, and it feels like so many New York galleries have moved out there and so many new spaces are popping up. I think, I don't know, to me, it just feels like the past few years has been, again, I'm no expert or historian in this zone.
No, but you're here as someone who knows more than me. So I give you that.
The two of us can move around in the dark together. maybe it's because it's just on my radar more, but I feel like there's this kind of, and I think there might be a little bit of like pandemic, like post-pandemic things that are kind of, you know, leaning in this direction, but it's like this feeling like, oh, it's available, you know, it's like available to anyone, artist, non-artist, you know, like collector, gallerist, like, you know, you can start a space and you can have a program and, you know, it can be very minimal, but it can function in a much larger way. And so I think people are noticing that and just kind of going like, yeah, I could do this. Like, and there's a lot of agency there, especially for artists who have like maybe spent a lot of time feeling like, oh, I have to wait for somebody to choose me. You know, like my dad's an actor. He's always talking about like, oh, it'd be so nice if I could like make my own content because I just want to work. I want to do my work and it's nice to have to wait. So I think a lot of people are, you know, feeling that and kind of acting on it like, oh, this is available and maybe I should take advantage of that. I don't know.
You just reminded me of, sorry for, this is a tangent, but you just reminded me of when I was working as at an art supply store. I think it was Pearl.
New York?
No, in LA. It shut down, but what's it called? It was run by a Scientologist, so it was a mess.
Pearl Paint? Because we have Pearl Paint in New York that shut down. Is it the same?
Yeah. I think it's the same one that you guys have the flagship over there. And then there was one in Miami too.
It's no longer, but yeah.
I think there was like some scamming going on. So the whole, okay. So anyway, so this kid and this dad came in and the dad was like trying to buy him all this paint and all this like canvas and stuff. And the dad was an actor and he was like supporting. So you just reminded me of that, but I could feel the burden of pressure on the kid. I'm not saying that that's how it was, but it's funny how like parents do that. Even if it's like something that's like, you know, as what I'm going to use the word whimsical as wanting to be a flight of fancy as wanting to be an artist. Like parents can still put pressure on you if that's their
it's
career.
It's so real. Yeah. And it's so funny. I mean, also just like thinking about like once you declare an interest in something as a child, like how hard you get hit over the head with it in gift giving. You know what I mean? It's like you say you like elephants and like every gift, you know, like, as an artist, like, you say you're a painter and it's like, I get this easel and like all, you know, all these things. It's like so sweet that people are like trying to be thoughtful, but also it's like maybe something that you would never use because you're not that kind of artist or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
so it's
just, yeah. I love that detail, that something you would never use. I think there's a lot of people listening right now who are going to relate to that sentiment.
You don't want to be snobby about it because it's like sort of a thought. Gift giving, I think, is very like, you know, not always altruistic is my opinion about gift giving. There's a lot there.
Yes, I think I can agree with that and co-sign that statement. Well, this is so much fun. I don't want to take too much of your time, but can you tell me any stories, or actually, you know what? Let's transition towards the discussion of like, what do you think artists don't know that artists could learn that will help them, especially because you're cresting into this or you're breaking into this new arena. Like 5 years is still pretty new, you know. Right? Like what and how have you changed, like as a person, like how, because I know that since I started the podcast I've changed. Mm-hmm. Like there, yeah. You just, it just does something to you, you know, like you have to adapt, you have to fit maybe some norms that you didn't necessarily value before you started, you know. Mm-hmm. Like for, I mean, not to not to be anything, but when I used to be able to say whatever I wanted, yeah. and now we're talking about Columbia. You went to Columbia University, and I'm like, let's not talk about Columbia University, right, you know. Yeah, but I definitely want to acknowledge it. Shout out to the students, but yeah, on YouTube, I don't want to touch that. But so how has the art thing is one thing, but how is being a dealer? And I like that you use that word dealer, because it is one of the funny things. Like, there's drug dealers, there's arms dealers, and there's art dealers, all elitist.
That's so real. we're in such an absurd world. I feel really excited. It's like this funky challenge that I'm just like obsessed with figuring out, because it just felt so opaque for so long. And it's just really exciting to try to, again, as an artist, just have this kind of, I think it makes me smarter in terms of how I deal with other galleries, like, cause I have just more of a sense of what they're working at. And I have actually a lot more respect for other galleries, because it's really challenging to sell art. And it's given me a lot of that sort of, it's funny, like anytime I'm working with an artist, I kind of try to flip my brain in both ways, because I'm wanting to like defend the gallery side of things. But I'm also like, okay, but if I were on that other side, and I have been with another gallery, you know, I'm just like constantly going back and forth. I think like whatever empathy in general is useful as a human.
That's a good one. That's not what I expected, but yeah.
More of that.
Let's I could use some else. More empathy too.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I remember always like right out of grad school, there were all these grants that everybody was applying for, and you'd have these like info sessions where you could go to the place and listen to tips on like how to apply for the grant, and it always felt kind of like fluff a little bit, you know, because they're like, you know, follow directions. That was the advice, right? Like follow the instructions. I sort of hate myself for saying this, but it's like, sometimes that will make or break how much time I give, you know, like when I do an open call and like, just the images are in all sorts of weird sizes and I can barely load them. And, you know, it's just like, it's just all like kind of time and efficiency and that sort of thing. Like if an artist gives me their files, somebody I'm working with, let's say, and they're organized, it makes it easier for me to promote their, you know, things like that. So like if they have a statement ready to go, all these things that like, you know, you need, but you can kind of like set aside because it's just like not pressing. And anyways, so basic stuff like that, which is kind of boring, but actually I find really important because I'm managing a space by myself. And so it's like sort of all about how much I can get done quickly. And with sales, like I find that things like they happen, they can like pick up momentum. It's like a hurry up and wait situation. So if I have everything accessible and ready to go, then I can make more things happen for artists. So stuff like that. I wish I had something like more romantic.
No, it's not romance. We're not talking. Be better at admin.
I don't know. I mean, the other thing I will say is that like, and I had heard this from other artists, like kind of whispered around that like a lot of galleries sort of like survive off of like sales of one artist, and then like that allows them to do more experimental things. And I kind of try to operate that way too, where like, you know, I have certain things that I'm like, I love all of the work that I show, but some of it for whatever reason or not sells better than others. And that allows me to like do a one man show with my dad performing at a weird space in LA. You know what I mean? Like I have the opportunity because I know that that's like covering me to play. And I think that's really important to still be able to play, because otherwise, like, what's the point? Like you could go make money in any other industry much more efficiently, you know? So I try to like give space for that in programming, where I just like, I know it's not going to necessarily yield immediate funds, but it will build the audience. It'll bring more artists. It'll bring more writers. And that's like, that's an important part of keeping a program alive. You need like, I knew from the beginning of the space, I was like, the artists need to come support this first. That's like going to make or break the situation. So yeah, I feel kind of, indebted to that. Thank you. And then
so you said that you were trying to make your tier accessible mm-hmm. to other artists. And I like the idea of artists collecting artists, right? Because
mm-hmm. a lot especially, of artists love art, yeah.
Yeah, and especially if one of them blows up, then you're in their collection.
Yeah.
But, sorry, I lost my train of thought after that joke. What was I saying? Artists collecting artists. So then do you have like a... a range that you charge for work? Is this, if this is too, like, I know that galleries don't like to disclose this stuff. So
it's all pretty public. Like, honestly, if you did any sort of digging into most galleries, you'd be able to get this information. So I don't know. I try to be as transparent as possible without, you know, talking too much, but I find, like, you know, in the beginning, again, like, my audience was artists. So it was like, I knew that the price point had to kind of fit within that range of things that other artists could afford. And that was sort of the beginning, was sort of modeling after, maybe you knew this program started in LA, those guys who did Got It for Cheap, who did those like art on paper sales and everything.
No, that,
like,
sounds good though.
It was fun. Yeah. It was like, I mean, some people, I don't know, maybe some people felt snobby about it, but I participated in a couple times where it's like every artwork is the same size and it's like famous artists and it's like unknown folks. And you go into a room and, like, you can, same price. All the works are like $30 for the small one and like $100 for the big one. And it's like kind of a free for all. And it's not the type of environment you might typically want to see your work installed in, but it was like a way to make art accessible. I found it was really like cool for meeting other artists and, you know, just making those connections, building my own art collection, which I couldn't have afforded otherwise. So I kind of like modeled a few of the first sales after that. And then, I started seeing like all these big collectors who I knew were buying at bigger galleries, like wanting to pay like the artist price, you know, like I wasn't like technically an artist price, but sort of like the price that was meant to appeal to artists. And I thought, you know, this work is really like the same quality as all the work that we're seeing in these like more commercial spaces. Like, I want to make sure that we're honoring that. So I think there's just like different ways to place things in the market so that it makes sense, you know, like I think a lot of artists will do editions and, you know, other kinds of things that make things more affordable. And I try to kind of, you know, model the pricing after other similar spaces, cause I just think the work is of the same quality and I want it to be valued in that way. And, you know, pricing is, like you said, nebulous, but I do try to be really thoughtful about like making sure that it makes sense in the marketplace in relation to like their level of exhibition history and, you know, the scale of their work and all those things. So, I don't know. Like, I just did this Barely Fair in Chicago and it's like a miniature art fair. Everything's a 12th the scale of a typical fair.
That sounds fun.
It was fun. Yeah.
I should talk to you more. I'm so like LA grounded that I like, it's so refreshing to talk to somebody that knows all these different things. Where is this fair? That's in Chicago.
It's in Chicago. It's run by, it was started by this collective, this artist collective, Julius Caesar. And Roland Miller is one of the artists who kind of like spiel. Yeah. you get emails from them. You get emails from Julius Caesar, which always cracks me up. And they have this amazing, like, kind of, I don't know if it's appropriate to call it like a community center, but there's like a ballroom on the top floor. It's called the Color Club and they have performances there. And there's like a bar downstairs where they have music. And they've been doing Barely Fair out of this top floor for at least the last 2 years. I've only participated two. I think it's been 4 years running. And, the reason I brought it up is because like I showed a lot of like 3x4 inch works at this show and like some of the artists were more famous and it was like a $1,300 work and some of them, you know, like have done really well in sales of their larger work, but we priced it at $400 because again, it was just more accessible and we knew that artists would be coming through and wanting to support it. And so that just made sense for that context. Like we could have charged $1,000 for the, you know, like it was the same good quality work, but you just kind of have to play with these things, I think sometimes. And, I don't know. It's like with selling, it's like the value only exists if somebody's willing to pay that price. So you kind of, you know, it's like a lot of testing.
Yeah, no, that is an intense part of your job that I think that people are, you know, because, yeah, like everybody thinks of galleries as something that is like, it's like an ever generous teat that if we could just feed off of it, but like they're businesses and they got to stay afloat, you know.
Well,
it's really interesting. It's refreshing to have your perspective. I am hearing the empathy on both sides. Like it's not cap. It's 100%.
I just really like, my goal overall is for the artist's career to grow like in the long term, not just like in a quick and dirty way, you know? And so my aim is like not to price so high that they're priced out of their market at that time, you know, so it can kind of steadily increase, but not to be so low that it looks cheap or people don't understand, you know, its value. It just like I'm working with a lot of emerging artists who have not had a huge, you know, exhibition history. So there is space to test. They don't have like, you know, all of their auction prices listed or something like this, where you really have something to bump against.
No, it sounds like a pretty good deal for artists, especially because they have you representing them. I'm starting to think about wrapping up because I've gotten you. Sometimes I just ask questions and don't provide anything in the interview, and I feel like I've drained you. So I don't want to make you keep talking. But as we wrap up, a question I ask everybody around this point is like, is there anything that I haven't been able to access that you want to share? That, you know, like I haven't maybe asked the right question to trigger the right thought, but if there's anything left that you're not, that you would like to have included in this episode.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's just fun to talk about these things, so I appreciate it. I mean, I'll plug.
I definitely want to have you back already.
yeah, that's so sweet. No, it's really my pleasure, and I want to hear about your side of things because I feel like that's what happens when someone you don't get to have the more even.
No, my job is to get out of the way. Because like sometimes I listen back and I'm like, why did I interject? Like, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I love listening to interviews. I'm like I was just joking with a friend of mine about like the Conan stuff because he loves to like tell a story too, and it like it's always this like kind of struggle between like you want to hear a story, but also like you like you're like, come on, give the guest a chance. So, yeah. Anyways, I like all of it. But,
no, yeah, this fluctuates here. It's more me talking, sometimes it's not. Go ahead. Yeah,
good too. Well, maybe I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll plug. We have Future Fair coming up May 1st through 4th.
For sure.
Maybe this will come out after that. I don't know.
May 1st through 4th. You know what? I think I'm just going to drop this one this week because it's going to be easy to edit. So.
Okay. If it does come out before then people can hear about that. If you're in New York, Chelsea, Industrial, May 1st through 4th, I'm presenting Becky Brown, whose work you saw at Last Projects, and Zebediah Keneally, who's an artist I've been working with for a while now as well, who does some really amazing drawings, and Becky makes paintings with a lot of text, and I'm excited about their connection. So that's that, and then I'll be back in LA in July showing some of my paintings at Serious Topics, which is run by, do you know Kristen Calabrese and Josh Astor?
No. I'll come to your show and meet them.
I appreciate it. There are two painters that were in my show on Hyperion. Josh was one of my TAs in college at UCLA, and Kristen is his wife. And I mean, they're partners, and they're actually going to be showing at Future Fair this month as well. So it's fun. You know, there's like a lot of kind of, you know, reciprocation, I think, in all of these connections. So that's nice.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I had a guest on, Skip Snow, who was had a moment in New York like in the 80s, I think, and he talked a lot on his interview about like the art versus the art community versus the art industry. And it's interesting to talk to somebody that navigates all three, you know, especially from a position of someone providing opportunities in that space, in the industrial space, in the commercial space, you know, but, you know, as opposed to somebody who sees it as a thing that can benefit them from interacting with, but doesn't have the business savvy. So I really appreciate, I mean, this did not disappoint. Like I said, I'm not going to cut anything out. It's like going to be such an easy episode to upload, but, thank you. You definitely know your stuff, and I feel like there's more to tap into that I will revisit at a later date.
Let's keep going.
I really appreciate your perspective, and you know, it's really hard to meet people that have such a nationwide understanding, because like I've heard a lot of about Albuquerque and New Mexico. I have my friend Jamie, who I've had on the show, Jamie Hamilton, lives out there, and he's always talking about it's like a huge collector area. You know, Santa Fe is big.
There's great artists out there, you know. It's like
which is interesting.
Like, university, you know, there's like a really nice program in Albuquerque.
Yeah, it goes counter to some of the notions that I've expressed and have on the show, which is that like the benefit of a New York and an LA is that there are bigger institutions which attracts more artists to be part of those communities. But there's no really big city in New Mexico. Like Albuquerque, I don't think anyone thinks of it as like a big, I think it's a town, if my understanding. Comment down below, and I apologize if that's not the case, if it's like a booming metropolis. I don't want to get my guests in trouble. But it's interesting, just like how it seems like, anyway, it's just interesting to have, because I'm trying to get a broader view. Obviously, I'm having more New York people on. I'm trying to reach out to more people. So if you have any artists that you represent that you'd like me to talk to, I think would be a good guest. We can talk about that off air.
It's so vast. Like, trying to understand New York in and of itself, LA in and of itself, they're all like all these micro things happening. And I'm trying to like maybe move international at some point. So anyways, it's just fun to see, you know, like it's just fun to feel.
The kindred spirits, is that, I think, yeah. As long as that doesn't have a romantic connotation. I just want to be careful. I'm at work. And then what's your Instagram? What's your other stuff?
Oh, okay. Instagram is my full name. Jacqueline Cedar, JAQUELINECEDAR. The gallery
no
is
underscore.
At, no underscore. The gallery has an underscore. It's at @good_naked.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's really a pleasure. I definitely look forward to learning more from you as your venture grows and becomes, maybe a mid-tier gallery at some point, you know, because I see the possibilities for you. All right. Thank you so much. If you guys enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to like and subscribe. Comment down below. If you're listening on audio platforms, rate us 5 stars. And we'll be back next week with another guest and another topic that may or may not be art related.